That it's good to know that you can have this relationship with Christ, and that even though it seemed like you might be under attack, and it might seem like the last brick is being thrown at you, that like I said last week, you can be like Mr. Weeble, Weebles wobble, but we don't fall down. You know, we might wobble, but we keep coming back up. We keep getting back up.
Welcome to the Anchored in Jesus radio program, the teaching ministry of Dr. William R. Glaze, founder and dean of the Pittsburgh Layman's Bible Institute and senior pastor of Bethany Baptist Church. We thank you for joining us today for the conclusion of The Biggest Loser. So let's rejoin Dr. Glaze for the conclusion of The Biggest Loser.
He said, nothing compares to the excellency of the knowledge that I now have in Jesus Christ. He said, not only that, he said that it's above and beyond, it's better than any philosophy, it's better than the highest thinker. He said, it's better. Oh, Sandy Patty and Larnell Harris put it like this. It's more than amazing. It's more than marvelous. It's more than wonderful. Paul said the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ, nothing can compare to that. And so he lets us know that he lost, the biggest loser. Paul was the biggest loser. He lost his worldly piety. He lost his worldly perspective. And now he's consumed with this knowledge of Christ. You know, sometimes it's a matter of perspective. There was a lady named Debbie. She had just got off the airline. Her luggage was mangled. Her purse had disappeared. Instead of entering the airport, she had to be ushered in through an enclosed corridor. When she got off the plane, it was pouring down, raining. She was drenched. She was far from home, with no money, with no identification, and no dry clothes. Have you been there before? Say amen. I've been there. All right? Now, many of us would be furious. Many of us would be angry. Many of us would be enraged to see our luggage mangled, to see our purse not know where it's at, to not have dry clothes or anything. But she wasn't like that. You see, she had just survived the crash of Flight 1420 in Little Rock, Arkansas. She said, when I got off the plane, I walked off with nothing. Then I stopped and I thought, I have everything. She suddenly realized that her life was more important than all she had lost. Now, when I was telling that story, many of you who fly, you probably identified. Man, I can't believe the airline, you know, upset. But when we think about her perspective, she was walking away with her life. All the material possessions that she had that might have been destroyed in the crash, she walked away with the most important thing, and that was her life. And her perspective changed. And you know, some of us need a change of perspective today. Some of us, we need a new way of thinking. You know, we complain, and we are bitter, and we are angry, and we are moaning. And you know what? We need to change our perspective. We got a worldly perspective. You know, we sit around. Oh, watch yourself now, Pastor. Watch yourself. You know, we sit around, and we watch shows that just feed on our anger and on our bitterness. We sit around and we hook up with people who just feed into that anger and that bitterness, and then we walk through and we think everybody's trying to take advantage of us. We think everybody's trying to get over on us. And so whatever little bit we got, whatever little tinsy, wincy, pincy little bit we got, we want to hold on to it, and we want to say us four no more and shut the door, and we want to hold on to it. Your perspective is wrong. Paul said, I let it go. I let that worldly perspective go. For what? The excellency of the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Before I came to Christ, I was a college student. And I was studying the books and, you know, I had at one time hooked up with the Black Panthers and another time back in the 60s, the peace. You know, one time I was power, next time I'm peace. You know, I didn't know who I was. I was bounced around by all these perspectives, and at one time, Assalamu alaikum. All of it, man, all of it. All those perspectives. Paul said that, I let them go for the excellency of the knowledge of knowing Jesus Christ. I let them go. Paul was the biggest loser. He lost his worldly piety. He lost his worldly perspective. But now I know some of us don't want to hear this. He was willing to let go his worldly possessions. He says in verse 8, yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss. Now here he goes again with those all things, whom I have suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung that I may win Christ. Now I think to me now, once again, I might be taking a little liberty with the text, but the first all things, I think he was contrasting with the excellency of the knowledge of Christ. This all things, he's contrasting with winning Christ. And then he refers to these all things. Now, I know that this is right before lunch, so I don't want to be too graphic. But he refers to the all things as dung. Look in your notes. Under this point, the loss of worldly possessions, all things are counted as dung. In the second part of verse 8, Paul contrasts the loss of all things with winning Christ. Here we can view the all things as an allusion to material possessions, especially since he counts them as dung. The word dung, skubalon, refers to excrements of animals, offscourgings, rubbish, dregs, and so figuratively speaks of things which are worthless and detestable. Skubalon was a word used to refer to a half-eaten corpse and filth of various kinds, including lumps of manure or human excrement. It was the word describing the portion of food rejected by the body as not nourishing. Now, see, I fixed it up, right? Right? You know, some of y'all would have just got ghetto, all right? You would have just got ghetto on it, all right? I tried to fix it up now, but you know what I'm talking about. You know what he's talking about, all right? Paul said he said, I count them as dung. He said they're worthless in comparison to winning Christ, in comparison to the love of Christ. You know, I heard a poem, and it's the poem is entitled, and I thought it was pretty apropos. It's entitled Hector the Collector. Maybe some of you may have heard this as children growing up. Hector the Collector collected bits of string, collected dolls with broken heads and rusty bells that would not ring, pieces of picture puzzles, bent up nails and ice cream sticks, twists of wires, worn out tires, paper bags, and broken bricks. Old chip vases, half shoelaces, Gatling guns that would not shoot, leaky boats that would not float, and stopped up horns that would not toot. Butter knives that had no handles, copper keys that fit no locks, rings that were too small for his fingers, dried up leaves, and patched up socks. Worn out belts that had no buckles, electric trains that had no tracks, airplane models, broken bottles, three-leg chairs, and cups with cracks. Hector the Collector loved these things with all his soul, loved them more than shiny diamonds, loved them more than glistening gold. Hector called all the people to come and share my treasure trunk, And all the sightless people came and looked and called it junk. Hector, all this junk, it was valuable to him. Broken shoelaces, broken bricks, you know, all these things were valuable. But when other people came and looked at it, what did they call it? Called it junk. All the things, we're like Hector Collector. All these things we hold on to down here. And God looks at them, and if we haven't submitted them to him, if we're not using them for his honor and glory, God looks at them, and we invite God to our treasure party, and we want to show God all our treasures. And what does God say? Nothing but junk. Nothing but junk. Paul said, I count all things but junk so that I might win Christ. Now notice here that Paul is not talking about salvation because he's already saved. He's not talking about salvation. What is Paul talking about here? When Paul is talking about winning Christ, he's talking about coming into the fullness of our salvation. He's talking about coming into a full understanding of who Christ is, entering into a love relationship with Christ, and doing everything that he can to know Christ at a deeper level. Wait till next week when he says that I might know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering. Paul said that all these other things, they just get in the way. All these other things, they hinder me in what my real goal is. What is my real goal? My real goal is to win Christ in all his fullness and to know him and to wake up in the morning with the joy of the Lord in my heart and to go through the day singing the songs of Zion in my heart, to have situations that come my way and be able to deal with them in the power of the Holy Spirit, to know him and to win Christ in all his fullness. Do you have that life today? Man, thank God that with everything that people have to go through, that it's good to know that you can have this relationship with Christ, and that even though it seems like you might be under attack and it might seem like the last brick is being thrown at you, that like I said last week, you can be like Mr. Weeble, Weebles wobble, but we don't fall down. You know, we might wobble, but we keep coming back up. We keep getting back up. And so Paul said that when you have Christ and you know him in all his fullness, do you know the fullness of Christ? Is Christ manifested in your life? Are you in a love relationship with Christ? Have you opened up your life to him? And are you loving him and desiring to serve him? Paul said that I might win him. And then Paul uses several athletic terms here, which is powerful. And here, look at the part in your notes where it says winning Christ. And here it said Paul wanted to win Christ. He is not referring to salvation, but to knowing Christ in all his fullness. His desire to win Christ was so great that he put it in athletic terms. Spurgeon, that great preacher, commenting on Paul's aspiration to win Christ. And listen to this. This is good. This is good. He says, this shows that the Savior held the same place in Paul's esteem as the crown did in the esteem of the runner of the Olympic Games. Wow. The runner. He uses athletic terms. Paul was trying to let us know what this meant to him to win Christ. And what he's telling us in a way that we can understand, just like that athlete trained, just like that athlete denied himself, just like that athlete ran, Paul said that I want to be like the athlete, not running for a wreath that perishes. He said, I want to be like the athlete, and I want to use everything that's within me, and I want to run after Christ. That's my goal. That's my desire. He goes on to say, to gain that crown, the competitor strained every nerve and sinew. Can you see him now? Can you see those runners on TV running and how that when they stretch, they look like Pastor Glaze when he was 19 years old, just putting his arm back and that bicep popped up and the tricep got it on the backside there. You know, ooh. every nerve and sinew, feeling as though he were content to drop dead at the goal if he might but win it. Paul felt that that were he to run with all his might, if that were the way of winning Christ, were he to strain soul and body to win him, it would be well worth the effort. He shows his value of Christ by speaking of him as the prize that he panted to win. Paul said, I left this dung behind. He said, I'm running and I want to know Christ in all his fullness. Reverend Glaze, fix that up. What's that mean practically? That when I get up in the morning, I open the word and I spend time in the word, I spend time in prayer. As I go through my day, I might have to deal with all kinds of situations, but my heart is toward Christ. I know he's walking with me, that everything I do is geared toward winning Christ. Just like that athlete, just like the Steelers this afternoon are going to go out there and play the Cleveland Browns, and they're going to put their best effort forward. Why? Because they want to win. Paul said that I'm doing everything I can to win the fullness of Jesus Christ. I want Christ to be glorified in my life. I want Christ to be manifested in my life to the hilt. Paul said he wanted to win Christ. Let me read something. This will be the last thing I read today. When we did our playbook for our football players in college, every year when we did a new playbook, we put this in the front of it. Now, some of you might not agree with some of the things that are said. That's all right. It's a speech by Vince Lombardi, and it's entitled, What It Takes to Win. And I want us to, as I read this, I want you to relate this to your Christian life and see what Vince Lombardi is probably the greatest coach, one of the greatest coaches that ever lived. This is what he said. Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. Now, some of you might not agree with some of the things that are said. That's all right. It's a speech by Vince Lombardi, and it's entitled, What It Takes to Win. And I want us to, as I read this, I want you to relate this to your Christian life and see what Vince Lombardi is probably the greatest coach, one of the greatest coaches that ever lived. This is what he said. Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while. You don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. There's no room for second place. There's only one place in my game, and that's first place. I have finished second twice at my time at Green Bay, and I don't ever want to finish second again. There's a second place bowl game, but it's the game for losers, and it's played by losers. It is and always be an American zeal to be first in anything we do and to win and to win and to win. Paul said that I might win Christ. That's what I'm talking about. Lombardi goes on to say, every time a football player goes to play his trade, he's got to play from the ground up. Oh, listen to this. Now, I'm talking as a Christian. Translate this into Christian language. From the soles of his feet right up to his head. Every inch of him has to play. Some guys play with their heads. That's okay. You've got to be smart to be number one in any business. But more importantly, you've got to play with your heart. Every fiber of your body. If you're lucky enough to find a guy with a lot of head and a lot of heart, he's never going to come off the field second. Paul said that I might win Christ. Running a football team is no different than running any other kind of organization. An army, a political party, or business. The principles are the same. The object is to win, to beat the other guy. Maybe that sounds hard or cruel. I don't think so. Paul said that I might win Christ. It is a reality of life that men are competitive, and the most competitive games draw out the most competitive men. That's why they are there, to compete. To know the rules and the objectives when they get in the game. The object is to win fairly, squarely, by the rules, but to win. Paul said that I might win Christ.
And in this truth, I've never known a man worth his salt who, in the long run, deep down in his heart, didn't appreciate the grind, the discipline. There's something in good men that really yearns for discipline and the harsh reality of head-to-head combat. Paul said that I might win Christ. I don't say these things because I believe in the brute nature of man, or that men must be brutalized to be combative. I believe in God, and I believe in human decency. Listen to this. I firmly believe that any man's finest hour, his greatest fulfillment to all he holds dear, is the moment when he has worked his heart out in a good cause and he is exhausted on the field of battle victoriously. Man, Lombardi, he said he believed in God. I don't know if he was a Christian or not. But you know what, man? I believe that if you go in most football locker rooms across the country, NFL, college, I believe you'll see this because it lets them know about winning. Oh, I'm not here to say that. And don't get super spiritual on me now and say, well, Pastor Glaze, sometimes we just need to compete. We don't need to be worried about winning. We need to just learn how to play by the rules. All right. Let me get that out because I know there's somebody out there saying that. You know, we the kids don't need to be keeping score. Okay. All right. I'm with you. I'm down with you. All right. You know, you put your religion on the shelf for a minute here. All right. Just look at what he's saying. I mean, Lombardi, and he was one of the greatest coaches that ever coached football. And his desire for winning was so strong. He said he only came in second twice in his time at Green Bay, and he didn't like it. And you know what? The sad reality of our society today is that we have a whole lot of losers. I see young ladies hooking up with losers. You know, you ought to hook your train to a winner. You know, young men hooking up with losers. You know, I'm trying to evangelize. I'm trying to help them get right. No, well, the chances are that they're going to take you the other direction. Now, let's be honest. You know, let's be honest. You know, for the most part. All right, there are some exceptions. All right. But I just see so many people hooking their trains up to losers. Paul said, I don't want to be hooked up to a loser. He said, man, I want to win Christ. That's my desire. He says, I'm going to do everything I can, just like the athlete, just like he strives, just like he trains. Everything that he does it to win. You know, the football players out there today, you know, the guy's not going out there to lose. They're not going out there to just be out on, just to say, well, we showed up on the field. You can't do that. But why is it as Christians? We just have a defeatist attitude. You know, we got this attitude of, well, you know what? If I get a chance to spend time with God today, then that's fine. You know, maybe if I'm not too tired before I go to sleep tonight, you know, maybe if my favorite TV program is not on tonight. And the Apostle Paul, he said that I might win Christ. That was my desire, that I might win Christ. Man, we need people with that same fire and that same passion that say, I want to win Christ. You know, once again, not that he was trying to get saved. He was already saved. He just wanted to experience all the fullness of Christ. All of it. His desire was so strong that he put it in athletic terms. That's my desire. Man, my desire is to win Christ. Every morning when I get up and I go and I try to go before the Lord, you know, my desire is, Lord, let me know a little bit more about you today that I didn't know yesterday. Lord, give me something today, Lord, that as I come across somebody that I want to see today, that I might be able to share what you gave me during this time because I want to win Christ. Paul was the biggest loser. He was the biggest loser. How about you? Are you losing the things of the world and gaining the things of God? I'll finish my next point next week and we'll pick it up. But I just want to leave it there that I might win Christ.
Thank you for joining us today on the Anchored in Jesus radio program. We hope you were challenged by today's teaching. Join us next time for the first half of I've Got Something to Brag About. If you would like to request an audio copy or the notes and outline of today's teaching, The Biggest Loser, You can contact us here at the Anchored in Jesus radio program by calling 877-831-5060 and request The Biggest Loser or program number 071111. Again, that's 877-831-5060 and request The Biggest Loser or program number 071111. If you would like to make a financial contribution to the program, you can send it to the Anchored in Jesus radio program, 7745 Tioga Street, Pittsburgh, PA 15208. That's the Anchored in Jesus radio program, 7745 Tioga Street, Pittsburgh, PA 15208.